Welcome to the Ecclesia Project podcast. In this episode, Reagan Sutterfield interviews Sam Ewell on the life and work of Ivan Illich. Sam is a graduate of Duke Divinity School and is currently working as a chaplain at the University in Birmingham, England. Sam is the author of Safe Speaking Conviviality, Reflections on Ivan Illich, Christian Mission, and the Promise of Life Together, published by Cascade Books. A Benedictine Oblate, Sam is now in training to become a deacon in the Roman Catholic Church. We recorded this conversation ahead of the celebration of Ivan Illich's 100th birthday on September 4th. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
So Sam, so good to be with you and to have you as a part of this conversation with the Ecclesia Project. And I wanted to start with just asking about who is Ivan Illich. I think that some people like myself, Illich has been a very important influence for a long while and certainly has important influences in the wider world that, you know, in asset-based community development and the work of Charles Taylor, we'll get maybe into that a little bit later.
Right.
But also many people just have not encountered Illich in their education. And we can talk a little bit about maybe why that might be the case. But I wanted to hear from you about who is Ivan Illich and why he might be important for conversations within the church.
Thank you, Reagan. And thanks. It's so good to connect with you again and to be here. Yeah, the who is Illich question. There's so I'll zoom out and do the sort of general answer, and then maybe I'll tell you the sort of how I met him, you know, way of answering that question. But Illich was born in 1926 and he passed in 2002. So this year is a special year in the sense that it's the centenary of his birth. And in fact, there's going to be a range of gatherings around that. And I highlight you, signpost you to Dugald Hine. Substack, where he's been conspiring about some of those gatherings. But yeah, it's Illich is you can't pigeonhole him. There isn't an academic or an ecclesial box in which you can put him. I can maybe just talk about phases of his life and frame it that way. But he was born in Eastern Europe, raised early years in Austria. I was raised Catholic and Jewish, and then during World War II, when Austria was invaded, and according to Aryan laws, he was half Jewish, so they had to flee, and his family fled to Florence, and he spent those early adult years in Italy. He was trained at the Gregorian as a Roman Catholic priest, and was active as a priest for a number of years. He also did a PhD in history, so his academic discipline, I guess that would be in the technical sense, he was a historian. Just looking at phases of his life, there was this kind of active ministry and campaigning years. He was a priest, he moved to New York City and was active as a parish priest in New York City in the 50s, which was significant in that you had Puerto Rican Great Migration after World War II there. And he was right in the heart of that, had his finger on the pulse of that migration, and which led him to move to Puerto Rico in the early 60s. And from there, he founded a kind of think tank formation center. The acronym was CIDOC, C-I-D-O-C. In Cuernavaca, outside of Mexico City. And that was where he was based from most of the 60s to early 70s. So again, there isn't a pull off the shelf answer of, you know, who was Illich? He had an academic formation. He was an incredibly generative thinker. He was a social critic and philosopher. He was most known for a series of books that he wrote as a public intellectual, Deschooling Society, Tools for Conviviality, Limits to Medicine, but he was a polymath in that sense. And you again, maybe that's just the place to land, is to say he transcended academic boundaries and was someone who was very much a child of the church, but also witnessed in significant ways outside of that as a public witness. I met him, if I can just make personalize this, it's significant, Reagan, thinking about it in the context of Ecclesia podcast, which is because I did my formative theological training at Duke Divinity School in the late 90s. Stanley Hauerwas was my supervisor. My wife did a PhD there with Stanley as well. And so we were trained there, and I'd never heard of Illich, never heard of him. And then I got to Brazil. Rosalie's from Brazil. We were living there in working in theological and ecclesial context. And in 2007, I met a guy named Cláudio Oliver, who would become my closest mate, but really more like my big brother in Brazil. He's 10 years older. At that time, Cláudio was doing a master's on three thinkers: Paulo Freire, known for Pedagogy of the Oppressed; Leo Tolstoy; and Ivan Illich. And when he said Illich, I was like, "Oh, you mean like the character, the death of Ivan Illich and Tolstoy?" He goes, "No, man, same name, different guy." And he then started describing Illich, and I was fascinated, but I was like, "Never, how can I have never heard of this?" And he was really teasing me, like, "Oh, you went to Duke, you studied theology, and you've never heard of Illich." So he sends me a link. And that link was to a 1968 talk that Illich did called To Hell with Good Intentions. And Illich just
One of my
really,
favorites.
okay, so yeah, you've come across it. And if anyone wants to search, you can find it online. And it was one of those things kind of like right out of the gate. When you listen to a new an artist musical, and you just know, you're just drawn in. It was one of
Really
his,
love.
he's got this harsh tone. And he ends that, and again, you've read it. He ends that, and I was, kind of going, "How's he going to land this?" And he says, "Come here to learn Spanish. Come to learn the songs. Come to pick the flowers and walk in the hills. But please do not come to help." And that's how he ends it. And I remember thinking at that first reading, Reagan, either he's just really grumpy and kind of harsh and a curmudgeon, or he sees something on the other side of helping, a different kind of presence, a more subversive incarnational presence. And that's what drew me in. So, Illich was someone that I'd never heard of before 2007. And for me, that there was really a kind of before and after in my theological imagination. I didn't go to Brazil to be a helper. I married a Brazilian and I wanted to share her life. We wanted to raise our kids bicultural, bilingual. Our wedding vows were from Ruth: "Your people will be my people." I had a lot of reasons to be in Brazil besides being a helper. And yet, it's also true. Once I got there, I realized I was wearing an invisible backpack of American white male expectations. And also, Brazilians were used to Americans coming as the helper. So when Illich, when it, I, you know, Illich came to me at a time where I was questioning, what does it mean to cross, to be here on mission or just as a Christian witness? What does presence mean if you're not there to assume you're there as a helper? I think that was the question that Illich provoked. And for me, he became both the most critical thinker that I'd ever read around Christian mission, development, church as institution, and also at the same time, the most generative guiding light around presence and what it might mean to belong to a people that are not your people. So that's why I wrote a PhD on him.
Yes, and for those, your PhD became the book Faith Seeking Conviviality, which is a great book published by Cascade, and so
Oh, thanks.
certainly recommend that to folks that, who want a theological introduction to Illich, and
Thank you.
framed within a lot of your personal narrative, which is really helpful, I think, for understanding that the impact that Illich can have, and I that, thank you for that introduction and the personal side of it as well, because I think that one of the critiques that Illich, I think, is so helpful with is his critique of institutions and the ways that they show up. And I bet I know Claudio as well, and
Yeah,
he
that's right.
introduced me to the collection of conversations with Illich, Rivers North of the Future, which has an introduction from the philosopher Charles Taylor, who was influenced by Illich. And in that introduction, Taylor, I think, really helpfully frames Illich's work as a critique of the institutions of the West as a kind of perversion of the Good Samaritan story, and that we have taken this call to love our neighbors, but we have then turned that into institutions. So we've institutionalized love, and so put it into a context that where love can't actually work, and live into the kind of freedom that love requires. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about Illich's critique of institutions, schooling, hospitals, but then also the church, because that he didn't limit it just to secular institutions that do have their roots in the West and in the church, but also the church itself.
Yeah, thank you for that frame. So just to if we go back to the Good Samaritan story, which I imagine listeners are going to be quite familiar with. So I think if we Illich's reading of that, and he never wrote a theology of the Good Samaritan or a systematic treatise. This is him, in conversation with David Cayley. But it's what he does in those conversations is he goes back to that story, and he wants us to hear it afresh. It's a parable, and his move, he wants us to hear the novelty and the surprise. Why would Jesus tell this story and tell this story in this way? You don't need that. We should love our neighbor. That's not surprising for Jesus's listeners. That's a direct command. That's, love your neighbor as yourself. That was known. The question was, who counts? Who's in? Where do I draw the line around neighbor? And so what's surprising in the Good Samaritan narrative is the way the category of neighbor, that threshold and of encounter gets exploded. So Illich, as a historian, kind of zooms out and he says, before Jesus and his telling of this story, ethics, he says, every ethos is tied to an ethnos. Every ethic is tied to a people. So if you think about, Greece and the polis, you have, who the citizens, there is an ethos of how you enact citizenship. And then there are xenoi, or, the stranger, or the barbarians and those outside. And there's a totally different ethic for how you relate to them. So they are not neighbors in that sense. So I mean, every people would have had, tribe. That was just a sort of human dynamic that your ethics was tied to your people. And what's novel in Jesus is that line between who's my people, who's my we. That's the surprise, is that the encounter that the Samaritan enacts on the road, how he was moved. So there's a couple of things there. One is it's crossing the threshold of who's my people. So we can have a new we now. That's a surprise that anyone that I encounter could be my neighbor, could be treated. This is what Jesus makes possible. And you could draw a line there, between other stories like the Syrophoenician woman in Matthew 15, Peter's encounter with Cornelius would be another one that comes to mind, in which it's not imaginable before the Messiah that Peter would go to Cornelius' house, that Peter would have table fellowship, that they could be a part of the same we. But there it is, right? So that's one thing that's surprising, is about who can be a part of my we. But it's also that love in the story is that movement of compassion. He was moved in his gut, in his, it was the bodily encounter. It was the encounter that made possible, the love was the overflow of the encounter. Okay, so those are a couple of moves that Illich makes. But then, right, so it's in a story and he kind of zooms out. And then he, there's a lot of moves here, but I think just to kind of draw the traces is as a historian, he sees how over time that call to hospitality, and it's also interesting that I don't think Illich does a lot with this wordplay, but you know, the word for hospitality in New Testament is xenophilia. We know what xenophobia is, the fear of the stranger, but the love of the stranger, the other, that's the hospitality. So it's that enactment of hospitality, the xenophilia that we see in the Samaritan, that over time turns into hospitalization, the institutionalization of that. So we build where before historically it would be the neighbor who knocks on the door, or you know, Benedictine spirituality, the first, you know, in the first monasteries in the West, welcome the one who knocks on the door as you would welcome Christ, which is a paraphrase of Matthew 25. Over time, that gets outsourced. So you kind of take the frame of we should care for the neighbor and the one who knocks on the door to we'll try to manage that encounter. And I think, and that's that corruption that you picked up on that the Taylor runs with in Illich. You know, Illich had this phrase that he played with a lot: the corruption of the best is the worst. So the encounter that the Samaritan enacts, representing the Messiah and the encounter between Jesus and all the who he encountered, that's the best. That's that surprise possibility of being moved, of sharing love and belonging to a new we. The worst of that is to try to manage that in a way, like you say, the institutionalization of love, of care, in a way that makes the encounter nearly impossible. And can even one step removed is to then think of it basically makes it impossible to be the neighbor, to you know, to have that bodily encounter. But Illich does several moves. You mentioned institution. I mean, you know, he the first that first book, De Schooling Society, he that there he's talking about learning and trying to say, I think the important move that he makes in that book, and we can then maybe bring it back to church, because I think there's an analogy there between school and church. But he talks about how institutions have two watersheds. Institutions are always, and for him, they're human artifacts. They're things we make. The first watershed, it's always how an institution can facilitate human activity. So for the school, humans have always learned. We've always shared knowledge. So that first watershed is school as this space in which that facilitates learning. So it might bring people together, resources together, this kind of thing. But the second watershed, and this is the one that he had his eye on, was when it actually becomes counterproductive and it's no longer facilitating the human activity, but actually corrupting it into something else. And I don't know how many people I've talked about. I'm in the UK context now. I didn't raise my kids in the States, but here people talk all the time about how the school system, while it's quite resourced in many ways, it's about evaluation. It's not primarily about human learning. It's about cracking the code, right? It's about and managing and evaluating people. So that's just one little move he makes. That tip, when an institution goes from facilitating human activity, learning in this case of the school, to it corrupting it and then it becoming about something else. So if we shift that towards, you know, he wrote in Limits to Medicine, hospitals exist in principle to facilitate care. Care is a verb. And Illich will say, he says this in Limits to Medicine, care is a verb. It's not a noun. You don't go get, it's something that people do. And he says, hospitals don't care for anyone. Only people care. The question is, do hospitals facilitate it? human care, or do they counterproductively distort it? So Illich, I mean, and I know that's a provocative way of putting it, but also, you know, his point was not that you, of course, you can go to a hospital and receive care from a doctor or a nurse. But what he's noticing is how over time, the institution, it just becomes about perpetual management. Health becomes this, and the expectation that that generates in the patient, that I get health as in a product from an institution called a hospital. So that's, I know those are some broad moves, but I think it's that shift from, if you take it back to the Good Samaritan, love, care, what the Samaritan enacted are human activities, they're verbs. Over time, that shifts, and our imagination in the West shifts to where we have this sort of ethos in our imagination that we should care, but if there's a shift towards institutionalizing those things in a way that we imagine that they're products and encounters that we can imagine instead of verbs. And that's the thing that Illich is, that's his critique, is that in the West, we've kind of tried to institutionalize these values. And so the real challenge, going back to church, and I'll just say it, you could say it this way, you know, churches don't disciple anyone. That might be another way to say, if you say hospitals don't care for anyone, they simply can facilitate care. Only people share faith with other people. And so the question is, how do our churches create the conditions and facilitate those encounters instead of seeing faith, hope, and love as products that we consume from a church and get from a church? How do those relationships in church and those encounters facilitate the growth of faith, hope, and love?
Thank you for that. There's so many different directions. I'd like to take that. But sticking with church for a moment, I think that, you know, in my own context, I'm in a parish in the Episcopal Church, and I find that many people in the parish want to do social good. They want to go out and start ministries. And,
right.
But we were gifted a few years ago, still a struggle, but we had a visit from a few, Damon Harges and Mike Mather, who are both people who are very involved in the work of asset-based community development. And I know John McKnight and Peter Block are both very directly influenced by Ivan Illich, and they started this asset-based community development framework in part from Illich's work. And part of what that is about don't go help people. Be curious about people.
Right.
Be in relationship with people.
Right.
Get to know your neighbors. And instead of just thinking, okay, we have this thing to offer to this need that's in our community, it's about relationship. And I wonder if we might be able to also name some other people. This is about friendship. Illich was very much about conviviality and friendship.
Right.
Some other strands that have come out of Illich's work. I think when you're talking about the hospital, I thought about Wendell Berry's essay "Health is Membership," and Berry is someone who has explicitly mentioned Illich as an influence. And so I wonder if there are other kind of friends on the journey. And I think of Peter Maron and Dorothy Day. I don't know that they had any contact with Illich at all, but that personalism that was central to their work. Can you tease out some of the other kind of friendships and conversation partners, whether Illich actually knew them or they were, you know, had mutual influence, or they're just picking up on the same realities?
That's so good. Yeah. I think, you've mentioned, John McKnight and ABCD. And I think that might be something to come back to because, and I'll just mention, you know, for me, again, this is, it's adjacent to Illich, but it's also how I received Illich. But for me, also, I don't know that I would have received Illich the same way without, being a student of Willie Jennings. So at Duke, Willie, I was in his course on theology of race and culture, and it was before the Christian Imagination came out. But anyway, that book was actually based on the course that he taught, theology of race and culture. But I think, it when Willie does so much about, about on the one hand, this diseased social imagination of Christianity and the colonial critique, but also, again, what Jesus makes possible. So what Willie's work is very important, because what Willie did around race and culture, I think Illich did for me around technology and institutions. Like, both, he's critiquing this corrupted anthropology, and doing it just through a different lens, through technology and institutions. That's been really important. I think maybe if I just draw it back, I just wanted to go back to McKnight there, because I think in the North American context, I think if you want to see where's the legacy and that sort of genealogy of friendships with Illich, the ABCD, or asset-based community development, that's a really important move. In Mexico, in the South, you might be familiar with the work of Gustavo Esteva. He wrote Grassroots Postmodernism. He spent a lot of time with Illich in Mexico, and again, incredibly generative reading of Illich and what he does with that. But I just wanted to make this connection for particularly for American listeners with that critique of institutions, because you still might be sitting with that, like, what is he? Is he anti-institutional? I think that's the facile reading, or the kind of knee jerk is, and Illich is not. I think it's important to slow that down and say, my way of putting in the book is that Illich is no more, he's not anti-institution, full stop, and he's not technophobe either, but he's against the corruption of both. And you could say the same thing about mission. He's not against mission any more than he's against technology. He's against the corruption of presence and how institutions and technologies corrupt presence. So the ABCD, what's really interesting about that is starting with assets. Instead of thinking, for example, the common ways that city councils work and perhaps churches work here in the UK context, if you want to get a funding bid to do something in your neighborhood, you practically have to prove the deprivation of your neighborhood. By my postcode, we have all these lacks, all these deficits. Now, there could be some statistical evidence for lack in your neighborhood, but what Illich and McKnight and Co. are wanting you to see and make visible is that every neighborhood has people, neighbors with gifts, skills, passions. So what does it look like to connect them instead of just doing it as a statistical we? The convivial, every convivial we, every neighborhood is going to have plumbers, gardeners, cooks, teachers, elders, kids with musical ability. So then the kind of the beauty is, what does it mean to start with those assets and gifts and connect them? They may or may not be in institutions, but the point is, and this is an important distinction that McKnight made in describing Illich, says Illich was less a prescriptive thinker and more of a proscriptive thinker. I think it was McKnight, or it might have been David Cayley. But the point is, Illich is not giving you a prescription in the sense of pull off the shelf model for mission or neighborhood or whatever it is that you're about. Proscriptive is about setting the limits for what institutions and tools can do for you. I think that's the important thing to take away, the limits of what institutions and tools and technology can do. So every neighbor, if we go back to what our neighbor, what we can do together, and you start looking at that, that's actually how for most of human history, people have gotten by, and I think about the generation, my grandparents and maybe our great grandparents, but that, pre-war generation, people who were born before World War II, I still have memories. I was born in 1972. I still have memories of my grandparents on a farm having, for example, harvest, corn huskings, and everyone getting together on a Saturday and sharing that work. And then in the afternoon, you drink lemonade and you play cards. So that would be an example of, it's the work is there to do, But it's convivial in the sense of there's a discipline to it, but there's also this social function and this and the in the bridge. But if you had a tool that did that, then suddenly you're simply dependent on that tool and you don't have that shared economy, shared relationships. And there are lots of examples of that. And I think it's a challenge to think about churches is how we can, yes, see our gatherings, but also the places where we live as places that are filled with gifts. So then the shift goes from being less about us with the lens of where are all these gaps and how do I problem solve and treat mission as a technical problem of, you know, things to be solved, and more as a relational possibility to be shared, and what treasure is in our midst that's buried in this field that we share together. So that's a shift that I think is really important that Illich opens up, and I'm glad you mentioned that.
More and more drawn into that,
Right.
you know, hinder our ability to share learning, to offer care, to even, you know, develop our lives together in our spiritual communities.
Yes. So I'll just go back, start with that word conviviality, because I know I've probably mentioned it a few times. And I ended up, when I revised the PhD on Illich into a book, I titled that, as you mentioned, Faith Seeking Conviviality. And for him, and he talks about this in the beginning of it's a word that shows up across his early writings, but we have it in English, but it's a bit flat in English. You know, someone's convivial, they're sociable, they're amiable, and it has that resonance. But literally, it, you know, at the root, it's about life together, convivere. The word for banquet in Latin is convivium. So it's that quality of shared life around a table would be probably the best image. But in Illich's use, when he's talking about technology and institutions, can think of it as conviviality is that freedom and interdependence. So it doesn't exclude tools or institutions, but it's about freedom and interdependence. It's how our tools, our institutions facilitate human activity, connection, this kind of thing. So conspiratio, another Latin term, we get conspiracy. Now that's an interesting, you know, relationship with that word. But you might remember the passage at the end of one of St. Paul's letters about greet one another with a holy kiss. So in the early church, Illich, as a historian, was studying this. The holy kiss was the conspiratio. And it doesn't mean conspiracy in the way we mean it, and in the kind of negative plot way, but it is about, it's intimate. It's intimate. And so it's become, oh, it, that gesture of the holy kiss evolved into the passing of the peace that we still have. But it's about that intimate gesture of sharing the same spirit that is in you is in me, and we share that conspiratio. So Illich talked about, there's an essay where he talks about the cultivation of conspiracy or conspiratio. And I think of that. I can't read John 20 the same way when, you know, Jesus, when that scene where the disciples are in the room locked out of fear, and Jesus comes through the risen Christ comes into the room and breathes on them and says, receive the Holy Spirit. As the Father sends me, so I send you. That's the sort of proto moment of the conspiratio, and what we can share together. I think other counter riffing on that, I mean, friendship is there are just several keywords that I'll mention, you know, friendship about sharing life around table. That was Illich's practice. Even when he itinerated as an academic at Penn State, also at University of Bremen and other places. But his practice was not primarily about his performance in a classroom. It was these conviviums, these gatherings around food and reflection, shared life with friends. That was his practice. So friendship, hospitality is a key word we've mentioned. He also mentions, I'll just mention two more. One is, it's the recovery of verbs. And I alluded to this earlier, but I think his work, his critique of development paradigm, a critique of his critique of how institutions can become dominant and monopolize human activity. I think one way that we can understand this, in plain English, is he talks about we need to recover verbs. Our language has shifted. He says even we talk about now things that we used to do, we now get. So, for example, I have an education. I get healthcare. These kinds of things. And he's not saying that you can't learn or be cared for, and it's not an anti-institutional move, but he's trying to create that imaginative space to say people have always learned before they got an education, and people have always cared and done things before they went to a hospital to get health and this kind of thing. So I think this recovery of human activity and verbs, and instead of thinking that the good life and the fullness of life is to consume nouns as institutional outputs, it's about how do we share life and share those verbs together. That's the recovery of verbs. And there's one other important word for him. This is in an article called Philosophy, Artifacts, and Friendship, but it's where he really leans into this word askesis, which we have. Askesis, it's the Greek word for training, for discipline. We get ascetical from this. But he encouraged us to think, to kind of transpose those monastic and desert practices. I mean, also like in relation to technology. So how do we discipline ourselves in ways that we're not simply that allow us to delink our imagination and our perception from institutional frameworks. So he has this throwaway line which has been with me, where he says, in Philosophy, Artifacts, and Friendship, that for the believer, contemplation is conversion to God's human face in the other. Contemplation is conversion to God's human face in the other. And that's just really stayed with me, because while Illich himself was not a teacher of contemplative practice, more and more, and really since I've written Faith-Seeking Conviviality, I think that what's coming up for me is what does it mean to have not only a convivial turn and recover verbs in the life of the church, but a contemplative turn where in an age of now of AI, of screens, of so many projections and encounters, how we, in the midst of that, can discipline our attention and our vision and our perception to see the one in front of us for that encounter. So that's what I think Illich is gesturing towards with askesis, is to, for us to, another way to put it is Pope Francis talks about a culture of encounter. I think that might be one way to pull it together. Illich is all about the encounter and how we cultivate a culture of encounter.
That's really generative, and I'd love to hear how that's playing out, that insight in your own work, because you're someone who has read Illich, you've written on Illich, and now you are a university chaplain, a Benedictine oblate, and so particularly talking about that contemplative life, I'm interested in. And how you have incorporated Illich's insights and kind of his way of attending to the world into your own work.
Thank you. So I think there's one Illich has to kind of bring that together. I think Illich, he describes his own relationship to the institution of the church. He makes this distinction between church as she and church as it. And I think that's been really helpful for me, because and for many of, I mean, I think if you've to recognize that the church is it, is church, it's the institutional form. They're going to be way, it's also a human institution. There are ways in which it can corrupt the surprise, the novelty of the gospel, and that that line between she and it, in one sense, can run right through each of our hearts. And but that critique of church, Illich was very critical of church as it, and you know he would say, in some ways, you know, another book that I'm reading right now is called Hospicing Modernity. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's by Brazilian thinker Vanessa Machado de Oliveira. So I think Illich would, to put in this language of hospicing, church is it is something that can only be hospice. There might be aspects of institutional forms and practices that just need to be composted and allowed to decay. So can we, that's church is it. But church is she is the mystery of the kingdom in our midst. It's the pearl of great value. It's the treasure in the field. It's the encounter that Christ makes possible and that the Spirit enables us and empowers us to enact. So I think that was a really helpful one, because if you only have a lens in which to see church is it, I think, and you end up in that deconstructive space, what are you left with after that? But I think it's important. Illich gives you both. I mean, for me, he also, you asked earlier about sort of adjacent thinkers or other generative thinkers. I think this hospicing modernity is one. I mean, one that I mentioned in the book, I mean, Walter Brueggemann's work on the prophetic imagination. So Illich both, it cuts both ways. It's the double-edged sword about its dismantling, is that prophetic critique, church is it, but it's also the energizing, the renewed imagination, church is she. So what does that look like in my own context? I think I did mention, for me, I think I would just say, yes, I'm a Benedictine oblate. So in 2023, I became a Benedictine oblate. So that's, for those who aren't familiar with that, it's like becoming an associate. So the role of Benedict has become the way I put it is, I connect it with John 15. Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches. The rule is the trellis for me. I needed a trellis. I needed something to support that life, just enough structure to support that. So, and Illich enabled that in many ways, because Illich was a historian. He talked about looking. He wrote another series of essays, Reagan, called In the Mirror of the Past. And the point of that is not that the past is, it's not a nostalgia trip. It's not saying there's a golden age in the sixth century with the rule of Benedict. That's not the move that he makes. There is no golden age for Illich. There's Christ, and there's that encounter, this eruption in history. And then there are the ways in which we extend and prolong that incarnation or corrupt it. So, but there is no golden age for Illich. But what Illich did give me, I think, the imagination, permission, and courage to do is to say, well, if we have a way of seeing in history both corruption, but also novelty and authentic encounter, then that gives me freedom to go back in the past. I don't have to think that my present moment contains the fullness. So, yeah, that was a really important shift for me. And Benedict, just as a thinker, you know, there are analogies with Benedict's own day and how in the ruins of, you know, a Roman Empire and him creating the conditions for different kinds of encounter, forms of hospitality, forms of prayer. I find that very inspiring. It's also Benedictine teacher, John Main, through Benedict and then Benedict's reading of Cassian, there's just an interesting bridge there, this contemplative turn. So John Main taught what he called Christian meditation. In the East, it's called prayer of the heart, but a form of silent prayer with a mantra or a prayer word. And that it's in the rule, it's described as pure prayer. So you have the offices and the rhythm of corporate prayer, but there's also the time for pure prayer. And I think, again, this Illich's nudge and this connection with the Benedictine tradition was a way of recovering practices of the past without reifying them or just, you know, going on a nostalgia trip, but saying this is for the whole church and it's for us now. So that was, I think, an important journey. And I'm also a trainee deacon in the Catholic Church. Yeah, it's not a straight line from studying and thinking and being influenced by Illich to that, but I do think there's something about Illich in like I said, this permission to both see the ways in which there is corruption in the church's forms and presence and practices, but also to have the confidence to think everything we need to be disciples and to be for the life of the world is given to us. And so wanting to lean into that. And so that's one way I can do it within the institution. And there's also my witness outside of it. I'll finish with this. My primary practice, Reagan, over the last 10 years has been in the neighborhood, really, as a community development practitioner. And really trying to lean in, there is a straight line from Illich, this not being anti-institutional, but just asking, what does it mean to be present in the place you live with the neighbors that you share life? So that's really been a vital part of my journey for the last 10 years. And I didn't have one job. I had a portfolio of projects and gigs, if you will, in the neighborhood. And for the last year and a half, I was invited by a neighbor in the neighborhood, my Canadian friend Jacqueline, to join the chaplaincy team at Aston University. So that's Aston. It's a university in Aston. So I'm the chaplaincy manager of a multi-faith chaplaincy at Aston. Yes, in terms of my role, there's been a change. But in terms, I said in the interview, I talked about gardens, I talked about neighbors, talked about being the neighbor you want to have, this kind of thing. And I said, the only way that I can imagine being a chaplain at a university is it's the same playbook that I've learned in the neighborhood. It's to pay attention and be curious about the gifts, skills, and passions of people, and then find ways to create the conditions to bring that together. So that's where I am now.
Well, Sam, this has been really helpful, and I hope that through our conversation, we have created some invitation for people to read Illich, to engage in his work. And I wondered, maybe as a closing question, where would you point people to learn more about Illich? And he wrote a number of books. Not all of them are easy reads, I would say. So where would you say would be the best beginning place for people who want to explore the work of Ivan Illich?
Great question. I already mentioned To Hell with Good Intentions as how I was introduced, but yes, you can find that online. That is an article. I think for me, my entry in terms of reading Illich was through David Cayley, who's recently passed. David Cayley wrote In Conversation with Ivan Illich, and then also The Three Rivers North, The Rivers North of the Future. Those are both interview transcripts and are really generative. So I would start with Cayley's books. And I mean, yes, Illich had a whole corpus that's all over the place, but I would start with Cayley's books. And I'll also, my book, Faith Seeking Conviviality, if you're interested in that intersection, particularly with what does it look like to reimagine or have a renewed imagination in terms of church, mission, stroke, witness. That's Faith Seeking Conviviality. Also, I do have a Substack called Desiring Life. Dugald Hine, I think I mentioned Dugald earlier, but Dugald has a Substack and is just a tremendously careful and generative reader of Illich. And he's organizing a series of gatherings as heading into next month, which will be the centenary of Illich's birth. So I would highlight Dugald's work. It's Hine, Dugald Hine.
Thank you so much, Sam. And I'll just mention for the EP audience, what one other thinker who is on Substack who has the Convivial Society Substack
Fantastic. Yeah.
is L.M. Secaucus or Michael Secaucus. He writes in the L.M. Secaucus, but he was a presenter at the Ecclesia Projects gathering during the pandemic. I think it was in 2020. So we didn't get to be with him in person, but he's also someone who writes a lot on Illich online if folks want to check him out. But thank you so much for those recommendations. And I'll second Kaylee's work as a really good way, and especially to get the breadth of Illich's concerns, because they were
Yes.
so varied.
Yes. 100%.
Sam, I really appreciate the time, and it's always good to talk with you. And thanks for being a friend of the Ecclesia Project, and blessings on all your good work.
Oh, Reagan, thank you. So pleased to be here. God bless you, bro.